Hi, welcome back to the podcast. My name is Doug, and I am a grateful believer in Jesus Christ, and I'm a recovering sex addict. And today's going to be a little bit different than usual. Our podcast kind of seemed to be all very eclectic in nature, but today I wanted to do just kind of a soliloquy, just me on the mic, and I'm going to be doing my testimony. Recently, I've given my testimony at a Celebrate Recovery meeting and received some feedback on that, and just really wanted to read that now kind of as my testimony. And I give that caveat of it being a Celebrate Recovery testimony because it's a little different. It's not a first step like we've been talking about on the podcast where it's every detail of my history. It's a larger view. It's kind of an ego's view of my life and my addiction, and then celebrating how God was able to turn that around and give hope. So it's very scripted. It is written out. I'll be reading it from a script. And just really wanted the chance to be able to share that with you guys so you knew where one of your hosts was coming from when they say they have a history in addiction. So I definitely understand addiction, and hopefully through this testimony that can speak to you, but wanted to give you that background. So this is episode 21, and this is my testimony that is kind of in a Celebrate Recovery format as we go through. And the beginning of this, I just want to go ahead and give credit where credit's due, is kind of taken from an adaptation from a John Mulaney stand-up bit where he talks about quicksand. So it's not originally my intent, or it's not originally my material, but I did utilize it in this way at the beginning of my testimony. Quicksand. Man, did I get that wrong as a kid. I really thought that was going to be a big deal when I was an adult. Every cartoon, every movie, it showed somebody getting stuck in quicksand. We had ways to get out of it. We knew you don't move very fast in it, or you'll start to drown even faster in it. We knew that a vine or a rope could pull you out, and there was always a way to get out of it. But man, as an adult, I haven't seen any quicksand. It's never been a part of my life, so I just feel like I really missed the boat with all the worry that I put into quicksand. And I'll talk more about that a little bit later. But I wanted to talk about the proverb that was guiding my life, unbeknownst to me, which was Proverbs 13:15. And it said, intelligence wins respect, but those who can't be trusted are on a road to ruin. I was on that path and I didn't even know it. I used intelligence and charm to gain respect. Respect that blew away in the wind as my true colors were eventually brought to light. And I proved that I couldn't be trusted, and that did lead me down the road to ruin. Growing up, I thought I had the perfect childhood. My parents were always present, and I didn't know of any real issues. Later, I learned that not knowing doesn't mean they don't exist. My family always went to church, but we went because you were supposed to, and I wasn't taught that there was a relationship possible with God. I was pretty sure that if you track my lineage all the way back, I can prove that I'm a pedigree Pharisee. We had rules for our rules, and it was about making sure that our tomb was good and whitewashed. I was always the cute kid at church, or the good kid that other kids would tell their parents they were going with, so their parents would say yes, or it was okay. I was a leader in our youth group, and I didn't cuss, I didn't party, and I knew how to respect adults and authority. But I had this ever-growing secret. I remember growing up that I was just a little bit curious about the opposite sex. Okay, curious probably isn't a strong enough word. Obsessed is probably more accurate. I can still remember distinctly to this day a girl in third grade standing over me during reading time so I could look up her skirt. She did that a few times, and I remember the excitement that I felt as well as the sense of it being so wrong. It was something that began to escalate my imagination and my curiosity. I remember making out with literally everyone I dated in high school. I was just looking for a kiss or two, not conversation, not relationship. So as you could tell, I was just such a great date. I was probably the kid that daughters should be warned about. But I felt it was still okay because I was still a virgin. And so I started using justification as part of my life on so many levels that even to this day, it's still hard to break away from. So my secret continued. In my early teen years, I found that art sections and bookstores had books with pictures of nude women. I was now probably the only 14-year-old boy that jumped at the chance to go to the mall with his mom and his sister. I found out from a friend that they actually print magazines dedicated to naked women, and I eventually learned about sex through a video he gave me. While it wasn't designed to be educational, I did learn a lot from it. It kind of seemed like a rite of passage at the time, but I now realize that it was the first taste of the most dangerous drug I would ever know. Being such a good kid, I struggled with this issue. I shouldn't want to look at these things. I shouldn't be pulled in. But I was, and very strongly. It changed how I viewed women. I no longer viewed them as God's daughter, but as objects like the one I have seen on display. I assumed that these acts are true adulthood, and I couldn't wait to be older. I assumed all people, including women, wanted to be seen and to act like these women that were depicted. My parents never fought, ever. I never heard either raise their voice at each other. I learned quickly that performance was everything. A 95 wasn't good enough in school because it still wasn't 100. They would come to support me at events and sports and concerts, and I remember trying to do well or win just not to have to hear about it on the way home about how I could have done better. They never asked me about my feelings, as I was a boy and I wasn't supposed to have them. I still remember crying when my dog died when I was 6 and being told that men don't cry. My family played games and laughed, however. Monopoly and Sorry were about as real as we got. We never had issues that we discussed. We only talked about everyone else's issues within the safety of our own walls. As I said, we weren't just religious, we were religious Olympians. We knew how to make laws about laws and judge anyone who was within 100 feet of breaking one of those. The heavy shame of sin and the eternal punishment of hell was talked about daily, so I knew that a struggle could never be discussed at home. So I placed it under the family rug, which I did learn later was a giant bulge that we were all avoiding. Time for college came, so I knew that a Christian college would be the cure I needed, and it was, well, for about 2 years. But then I found that guys there had stashes of these same videos too. They were joked about if they were found and traded some, but never openly discussed. So I assumed everyone did it and no one talked about it. It was just a guy thing, I thought, and I justified that as normal. So during college, the internet became a thing. Maybe you've heard of it. Well, I have heard it said that the internet was to porn like cocaine was to the drug world. It was a game changer. I remember going to the computer lab and finding a computer where no one else could see the screen and watching the slowly loading females on the screen. I remember during my senior year, a man came to the door and called me into the hall. He asked me to join him in his office, where he told me that he was the man paid to monitor the activities on the computer. He thought I was a nice kid and he didn't want to see me get kicked out, so he promised me not to do it again. I learned that day that sly talking can go a long way. And I also learned that internet activity could be tracked. Who knew? My freshman year, I locked eyes with the most beautiful girl I had ever seen. She saw past my acid-washed jeans and my rolled-up t-shirt sleeves, and we soon began dating. We were serious fast, and we vowed to stay sexually pure until marriage. And I knew she would cure my issue. We did discuss how other guys viewed pornography and some men were visually stimulated, but I told her that I had never struggled and that just wasn't my thing. That was the beginning of a string of lies that I told her for years to come. We dated for about 3 years and we were married near the end of my senior year. I knew that having a wife would help me focus on other things more appropriately now that I could be sexually active. And it did. For about 3 months. I utilized the home computer for years, at times when my wife was asleep or she was gone. Many times there were questions from her about certain websites or just strange behaviors, so I told her lies about some crazy technology abnormality that must have happened, but because she trusted me, that was good enough for her. Websites soon turned into chat rooms, and chat rooms turned into video rooms, and video rooms turned into a world that I just flat thought I was missing out on. During my career, I was primarily around females, so I learned to talk with them, laugh with them, and objectify them. I learned how to flirt, and I did that often. I had many women that I would email and flirt with, but I knew the boundary of a physical affair would never be breached. But that secret just kept pushing me. Emotional affairs did turn to physical affairs, and I struggled to find ways to end them. Promotions to other positions allowed me new places and fresh starts, but each time I would fall deeper and deeper with more coworkers or women from the past or anonymous partners from the internet. There were times that I was on vacation meeting women during the day and at night while my wife and kids were asleep or when they played. Work trips weren't about work. They were about meeting women or coworkers. Pornography became the least of my secret issues. It was a multiple time a week habit, but my secrets were much darker and much more inescapable. I knew there were so many secrets that I would just take to my grave. So many things that no one would believe about me. So many things that I could never overcome. There were times I had affairs with my wife's friends, with widows, people at church. No one seemed immune. I was completely lost in my addiction and truly out of control. I wanted more out of life. I wanted to be healed, and I asked for it thousands of times. I wanted to be a husband of integrity and an example for my kids. I just knew somehow deep down these weren't really possible for me. I was just too broken. At my lowest point, I was often in meetings with more women that I was currently sexual with than there was in the meeting that I wasn't. I was sneaking out at night on a frequent basis, and I was texting more during the day than I was actually working. All along, my wife didn't feel comfortable with the time I spent at work, my obsession of my appearance, and my flirtiness with other women. I would gaslight that issue, and she began to think she was the problem, and that this was as good as the marriage can get. She desperately sought a way to become better, but I just hid well behind the good enough. I couldn't cope with the stress of home, work, and all the extra addiction aspects, so I turned to alcohol. I had drank socially for years, but it became a part of how I needed to unwind. I can count the times on one hand that I was actually drunk, but the issue was the secrets and the lies. I would drink an extra drink in the garage before dinner, and an extra one or two after. I would find a way to drink if I had a few extra minutes. I would drop my kids off for activities and run to a restaurant for a quick drink. It was how I coped with just how broken I was. I told myself that I was living, but every day I knew I was deeper and deeper in a pit that was just swallowing me up. I could never figure out how this type of living really just felt like dying. Soon, my wife found evidence of an affair. I lied and admitted only to an emotional affair. That lie went on for months in therapy sessions with various counselors, as well as with family and friends. The lying was just a part of who I was, it seemed. A month later, my wife became aware of the secret drinking. While she didn't know the full scope, she knew I needed help. So Celebrate Recovery became a part of my vocabulary at this point. Through going to meetings, their worship, and beginning a 12-step program, I thought I could knock out two birds with one stone, so to speak. You know, address the alcohol and the sexual impurity. But God doesn't work that way. God brought me there to prepare me for the next step, which was addressing my primary addiction. So 2 months later, my wife became aware of some affairs. She left me. Rightly so. I began the slow journey of deciding who I want to be. I felt that I was kind of on top of this hill, and I could fully give in to my addiction and leave all I've known and wanted, or I could turn around and just try to figure out how to fix all this mess. I chose to fix the mess. There were programs there to help. There was counseling. There was Celebrate Recovery. And there was Castamonia. I thankfully turned to those to find answers and to truly find God, not towards the darker past. I can't say that from that point it was all sunshine and butterflies. There were more lies and there were more bumps along the journey as the past darkness kept trying to pull me back. But I haven't been sexual or viewed pornography since that date. I wasn't fully pulled back in, but I wasn't the honest man that I knew I could be. So that fact isn't something I celebrate, but I can see the marked difference for the man that I once was. Celebrate recovery brought me hope in the darkest times. There were people who didn't run from me, even after knowing all of my dark side. They supported me where I was and helped me see the road before me. I worked with my 12-step group weekly to learn what it means to be honest and how to dig deeper into my emotions, because I actually do have them. Those guys were there for me when literally no one else was. The 12 steps were a vital part of my recovery, and I needed every single step. But I do know that the fourth step offered me the greatest insight. It was a huge challenge to figure out all my character defects, all my resentments, and my fears, but it was well worth the effort. If you're approaching the 12 steps or you're specifically working on step 4, I just encourage you to have people alongside you to support you. And remember that you are not alone. All my recovery programs have taught me that. I may be very broken, but it's amazing to know that I'm not the only one that is. And it's amazing to know that there is hope for a better tomorrow. I lost my job, my reputation, and my family. I was living with my mom. And I figured that was just my new existence. But God did have a bigger plan. He needed me to see where my life could have gone. My wife heard clearly from God that she needed to give me another chance. A chance after recovery. We are both working recovery and looking for healing in our marriage. She deals daily with triggers from the old me. And I love being able to confidently say that man is dead in the past. God is creating me to be new. She is the strongest person I know. She is able to look past her own pain and hurt to see a better future for us and the kids. She is able to see a story that God is writing, even though we had to go into the pencil sharpener first. But what about all those lies? How do those stop? Well, polygraphs every 3 months certainly help. But I also began to see how lies don't allow for a true relationship with someone. It basically says that I just don't believe that person's strong enough to handle the truth. And I've learned that my wife, friends, and family, they're stronger than me. They can handle the truth, and they deserve the truth. So my wife knows 100% of my dark past, all the names and all the places. But she can still look at me with love. And God is working on me through her. Today, I am thankfully sexually sober and sober from alcohol. I am seeking ways to help other men find help in a lost sexual world. So all these programs for sex addicts saved my life. God saved my life through them. He redesigned me the way that I'm supposed to be, for my wife and for my kids. I am new and I love it. My CR leader once told me that God doesn't put you in a penalty box, so it's time to get out on the ice and skate. I am free in Christ, and I will delight in the undeserved grace and wonder and amazement about why there is no condemnation in Christ, like Romans 8 talks about. I am alive and free, and the darkness will not win. If I can find healing and redemption, anyone can. Purity can be reached, and new white snow can cover over you. If you don't know where to turn, look up. And remember that you are not alone, ever. God is always with you, and you are joined with tens of thousands of men and women who are on the same rocky journey of recovery that you are. Being alone means trying to fix it alone, and you just can't. It's time to trust others enough to let them help you. Remember that anyone who is joined to Christ is a new being. The old is gone, and the new has come. And that's found in 2 Corinthians 5:17. So what about that quicksand I talked about at the beginning? Turns out that all those cartoons were right. It was a thing, and it was a big thing, just much different than they depicted it. There are so many places in this world that look like solid ground, but they aren't. The devil knows how to trap your feet. You could be pulled out, but that takes admitting that you need help. So maybe you should pretend that you're fine. I'm sure it'll pass and you won't sink anymore. But pretty soon you're waist deep in it. Well, now it's just embarrassing to ask for help because you should have asked for help a long time ago. Now you can't say anything. But you keep letting it go and the devil will take you under. You can't see and you can't breathe and it'll kill you. But God offers true, solid ground. And when we are in his light, we can see the quicksand much easier. So you don't need Scooby-Doo and you don't need vines to get you out. You just need to lift your arms up and ask for help. And God provides that help in countless ways, like men and women around you, like programs, like friends and neighbors that truly care about you. And so my prayer for you is that may God help you find ways to stay out of the quicksand. Guys, I thank you for listening to my testimony. Remember that you are not walking this road alone and that God cares for you and will help you find a way to sexual purity.